Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by rockauto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Thank you, Alec Webb. I am John Davis, and welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 81. And in the studio with me today, I'm pleased to have our producer, writer, and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
And our road test producer, Ben Davis.
Aloha.
Our writer, Patrick Lucas.
Hello, everyone.
And our assistant producer, Greg Carlos.
Hey there.
Okay, everybody move up to the microphones, get ready to speak up because we have a lot to cover today. We'll have a lightning round, our MotorWeek mailbag. We'll talk about some of the new cars coming out that we have coming up soon on MotorWeek. But let's start off with the 2013 Geneva International Motor Show. This is the last big European auto show for this season. A lot of stuff was unveiled there, foremost being the Corvette Stingray convertible. From all accounts, it took the audience absolutely by storm, as did the coupe when it was unveiled in Detroit here in January. Patrick, you've been doing most of the work on the Geneva show. Anything else there that struck you besides the fact that most of the cars that they seem to be getting pressed cost over $1 million a piece?
It kind of got out of hand. There's a $4 million Lamborghini. It's a $1.15 million new McLaren.
The La Ferrari.
That's true, yeah. Those are the big three supercars.
I wonder if that's how they're going to pronounce it.
The Corvette's not over $1 million, is it?
No, the Corvette's not. Corvette's a good looking. The Corvette's probably one of the bargain supercar there, along with maybe the new Alfa Romeo 4C. Geneva's always been sort of a fashion show, but this year more than ever. But what struck you about those super exorbitant cars? Did you find them intriguing, just eye candy, or what?
They're all going to be awesome, I'm sure, and love to drive any of them. But especially the Lamborghini seems a little extravagant, considering they're going to make three of them.
Yeah,
it's a
hand-built car.
Yeah, and then it's based off the Aventador, so it's not totally necessarily a new car.
It makes the new McLaren P1 look sort of like an also-ran at 1.15
yeah, exactly.
mil a piece, and they're going to build 375 of those, I guess.
Yeah. But no, there's some lower end stuff. The FT86, basically the convertible Scion FRS.
Good looking.
Really? Yeah.
Good looking.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Back to the Corvette, I thought it was interesting that they were able to. They've done a couple things. The top now is automatic on all models instead of both either having a choice of manual or automatic. And thank goodness, no more do you have to unlatch anything at the windshield header. Apparently, they managed to keep just about everything intact except the rear fender cooling vents that cool the rear transaxle. They're now scooping up air from underneath that will take care of that because the roof mechanism took up some space. But I thought they did a nice job of transforming it into a convertible. The top looks really minimalist.
Yeah, I've read from what a lot of people have said, and I agree with that too. It's kind of, with the top down, it's a little less kind of severe looking. It's a yeah. little more, kind of traditional Corvette. But it still looks awesome, and I love the redesign.
A lot of other stuff there. The new Rolls-Royce Wrath, the new GT3 version of the latest 911. But along with some of the other cars that you mentioned that were more affordable, there is a new GTI. Matter of fact, it looked like there's so many new Audi and Volkswagen products there, they practically own the show. And there's a new model called the Volkswagen GTD Diesel, which kind of looks interesting. It looks like a performance diesel for the masses. Volvo pretty much did a rework of almost everything they make. So, there was a heck of a lot of news there, and a lot of it will be coming to the U.S. eventually.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see what exactly does make it, see whether, those diesels are a big hit over here. So far, it's been kind of hit or miss.
Okay, let's move on to a car that I think just about everybody around the table has had a lot of experience with. It's one of the cars we took to our winter testing at Roebling Road in Georgia this year, and that's the Ford Focus ST, Ford's first global performance car. Who'd like to start in on that? Is this little hot rod Focus the real thing?
I had a lot of fun driving that thing at the track. I thought it might be all hype. But it's the real deal. It's fun to steer it with the gas pedal. You can You can oversteer it, understeer it, and pretty much get it around the track that way. It's a lot of fun.
I was surprised how much that back end was willing to come out, you know, expecting a lot of understeer, but it really wasn't that bad. I mean, like Ben said, it was a lot of fun around the track.
Yeah, a lot more fun than I was expecting, and the price is extremely low. Definitely the best performance bargain out there right now. Looks cool. Hatchback, manual only, true European style. Sport.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there. Fiat Abarth, 500 Abarth. How would you compare the two of them? Would you? Because they're, to me, they're almost two peas in a pod.
Oh, well, this thing's got like 100 more horsepower than the Abarth, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what the Abarth is.
I think it's in the upper twos for the ST.
270 for the ST.
But I didn't feel like, I guess, throwing it around, it was as. I felt like that it was not quite as much pure, unadulterated fun as the Abarth, although they both were terrific.
Well, it didn't have the snarl of the Abarth does, for sure, but, you know.
The Abarth has such a tiny little wheelbase that you can practically turn the darn thing on a dime.
Yeah, but it still felt like a toy. I mean, a fun toy. Mm-hmm. I'd say the ST is a little more serious.
Felt like a real
serious
car.
Yeah.
Big enough for everyday use. Yeah.
You know, and you were mentioning, the front push. It still has a little bit of understeer, but gosh, you didn't care because the car was so drivable with throttle.
Exactly.
That it was the most comfortable, and maybe that's another way to look at it. At speed, it was the most comfortable car, modest-priced front driver car I've ever driven.
Yeah, and definitely step up to the Recaros because they were awesome.
Yeah, they were awesome seats.
That's part of a package that I would highly recommend everybody getting.
On the street, you know, they pumped the exhaust note in the car, but when you're on the track, you couldn't even hear it, which I was a little bit sad about.
That's true.
The Stilo helmets, you know.
Yeah, so if you want the true experience, bore some holes in your helmet so your ears can hear a little bit. But on the street, it sounded pretty good.
Yeah, it did.
It's a nice, nice package, and Ford's going to apparently do more of that type of ST product. And there's actually a step up above the ST that's due out, and I hope they bring it here.
Well, they did a Fiesta ST.
But they're also talking about a another Focus, and I've forgotten the nomenclature.
The RS.
Is it the RS?
I don't know. They had an RS before.
It's a step above the ST. Yeah.
That's got to be all smiles.
Yeah, not including the Shelby. Didn't they do a Shelby Focus?
Yes, they
ST?
Did.
But I don't think they really did anything performance-wise. They just kind of wrapped it in a Shelby shell.
Was that the SVT Focus? Or is there something?
Yeah. Well, that was a while ago.
Yeah, that's
SVT Focus.
Yeah.
That was a pretty sweet car, but this ST is like on a whole nother level than that.
Speaking of a car that's on another level, the Audi RS5. It took us a while to get our hands on this car, but boy, was it worth it. This was also a car that we took to Roebling. Anybody want to chime in?
It's like a muscle car that handles. I mean,
it is, man. It's like a European pony car.
It's fast and straight.
Way over 400 horsepower, but balanced. I guess the thing that got me is how balanced the car felt.
Yeah, and it felt just touring around town. You had no idea of the potential that it had until you get on the track and really start pushing it. And it was amazing.
Yeah, watching it go around the track, I was able to watch from various locations around the track. You know, it was so composed over the other cars coming around, you know, certain turns at Roebling. It's really amazing, you know, just the ease of driving it around that track.
I'm sure part of that is the Quattro system, but that can't be all of it.
True. You know, a lot of the parts, you know, come from the R8, and it has a similar feel to the R8. You know, it feels, I wouldn't say soft, but it just doesn't feel harsh at all. But
no, it didn't.
Just handles like crazy. The only thing I pause is it's like 70 grand, which I don't know, you know, there's a lot of other stuff out there for that.
A5, S5, RS5, that body shell, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. It's more than an M3, which at that point you really have to start, you know, kind of splitting hairs to see which one is better.
Splitting hairs. The Chevrolet Camaro 1LE. You are. I'm just taking advantage of them. Throw me a softball and, you know, I'll hit it out of the park. The 1LE. Less than a ZL1, but more than a Camaro SS. Track-ready Camaro, they claim. Of course, it's a historic name. Did the car live up to its billing?
Okay, I'll jump in.
Might as well. You drove it but pretty much more than anyone else.
The 1LE, it's not like a new Camaro model. The 1LE is a...
It's a package.
It's a package you add on to any SS coupe with the manual trans. And basically you get all the ZL1 suspension bits, but just not the engine.
You don't get the shocks, either the magnetic shocks. Or
the rear shocks. Yeah. And you get a bigger front stabilizer bar. Yeah. You get the same ZL1 wheels.
No supercharger.
No supercharger, just LS V8.
It's basically supposed to go head-to-head with the Boss 302, but unlike the original 1LE, it has radio and creature comforts in it.
It's got the same kind of flat black approach as the Boss, you know, with blacked-out body parts and stuff. But it's $6,000 cheaper than the Boss, but that's kind of deceiving because the Boss comes pretty... a lot better equipped, and you by the time you up the 1LE to the same amount of equipment, they're pretty close.
The gap.
Still cheaper, I think.
But... did you like it better?
Yeah, oh,
we didn't have them side by side, but did you like the 1LE better? I mean, the Boss Mustang 302 is one of the best cars we've ever driven.
No, I mean, it's a much better handling Camaro at the end of the day,
but
it just doesn't have the light and nimble feel of the Boss. I don't know. What did you think?
I'd have to get them back to back in the same day on the track, because I've heard a lot of people think that the 1LE does handle better on the track than the Boss, but I'd have to give it to the Boss just for the feel of the shifter and the steering and stuff.
Historically, it was always, going back 30 years when we do any kind of race off between a Mustang and a Camaro, you'd always have the Mustang faster in the straight line, but then the Camaro, which in the latter years had an IRS, it would handle better. And you just wonder if that's probably not still pretty much the way it comes out. They still may have a slight edge in the corners. Well, it's true too that we have horsepower wars going on again with pony cars, and still seeing the best fuel economy they've ever delivered. And this is a place that I don't think 10 years ago most of us thought we'd be able to get to. So it's pretty impressive. Anybody other comments? All right, let's move on to one of our lightning rounds. All right, this is a long question, but I think the answers will come pretty short. This is where we give our panelists 2 minutes to debate trending automotive topics. And when their time is up, you will hear the bell rang by our producer, Michelle Parker. Here we go. While it won't be introduced until the New York Auto Show, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, Chrysler recently released images of the 2014 Jeep Cherokee. They sort of had to, since Jalopnik already had spy shots of it. The radical design changed from the boxy SUV that we all remember to a sleeker look. It has been very polarizing on the internet. Facebook fans of Motor Week were split about 70% liking the new design, 30% disliking it. I've seen much more of a 50-50 split on other sites. What do you think of the Cherokee's return, and how does this new vehicle fit in their product line?
Yeah, I'm surprised by that 70% number, honestly.
They liked it.
When I first saw the pictures, I'm just like, wow, it's really starting to fall into that category with the rest of, you know, the SUVs that we're seeing. It doesn't look as rugged, and from the pictures that we're seeing, it's only like on-road driving shot and stuff like that. It's like they're not trying to market it towards that, take it off-road and do what you please with it. It's just, you know, it's trying to be upscale.
Think Patriot and Compass, don't think Wrangler, because that's kind of where it's a crossover, designed for the road more than off-road, and I'm glad to see the name come back, and I think it's going to be a nice vehicle.
It's also designed for the world market. It'll be one of their more high-volume models.
Right, which has kept selling the Cherokee name.
Exactly, and it's amazing that they didn't use it here. We had the Liberty.
Yeah, I think it's going to ride the Jeep name out and just, you know, rely on that for sales numbers. I
mean, all it really has to be is more capable than a CRV or a RAV4, and I'm sure Jeep's got the bits and pieces to make that happen, and it'll be a sales leader in its segment, I imagine. Then they'll have room for and extra money to bring out things like the FC concept they've been kicking around. Maybe that'll go into production.
Well,
they just need a big moneymaker.
Yeah. Yeah, they've already got the four-door Wrangler, so did they really need another, you know,
exactly,
super capable mid-size-ish SUV?
I don't think there's a demand for a super capable SUV in that size.
Yeah. Thanks, Michelle. I'll just one quick. I want to get a quick from each of you. What'd you think about the squinty headlights? Like them or not?
That's what people like. Yeah, so bring it on.
Pat?
It's a little strange looking, but I could get used to it.
I'm going to disagree. I don't like them.
I'm sure it'll look better.
They look like
this. Yeah, it looks like somebody who's about to sneeze.
And on that, I think we'll move along. All right, our Motor Week mailbag. Thank you, Greg. Remember, if you submit a question that we use here on the podcast, you will get a fabulous Motor Week t-shirt. So here we go. Now, Rusty asks, you guys drive a lot of cars. I'm curious to know, what kind of car do you own for your daily driver? Ben, we'll start with you.
I thought they were asking about yours. I've had so many cars in the past. Currently, I'm driving a Tahoe just because I had a baby 5 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thanks. 01 Tahoe. I love it.
Greg.
Well, I just traded in the Aventador, so now I'm driving a 05 Mazda 6i. At the current time, and I'm currently starting my search for a Miata, a 90 to 95 Miata.
Wow.
I'd like to get my hands on.
Right. I'm looking for one of those too.
Patrick.
I'm driving a 2009 Audi A4.
He's got the high class car of the crew.
Which is going to be quite nice with this snow coming up. Get that Quattro working.
Brian.
2000 Toyota Celica GTS.
And I have to say,
that's not your daily driver, dude. You drive that like once every 6 months.
At least once a month.
Come on. It looks new.
Guaranteed. I mean, what is it? 12, 13 years old?
Yeah,
it looks
13
brand
years,
new.
Yeah.
You're blurring the line there.
The car you never see, but it's the closest thing I have to a daily driver, is a 2002 Mini Cooper when I can steal it out of my wife's hands. Very good. Thank you one and all. Rusty, we hope that answers your question.
Yeah, next time tell us what your daily driver is, too. That's what we want to know.
We probably find out it's something that's pretty interesting. All right, that sort of wraps up our Motor Week podcast number 81. I want to thank our audio engineer for today, David Wainwright, our podcast creator, Bill Mixter, and, of course, our podcast producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with a bell. Ding, ding. And thank you all very much for tuning into this Motor Week podcast. I hope you had as much fun listening as we had doing it. Be sure to catch Motor Week on your local public television stations. Also, watch us on the Velocity Cable Channel. Till next week, for all of us sitting around the table, for Brian Robinson, Ben Davis, Patrick Lucas, Greg Carlos, and myself, John Davis, thanks for watching, and we'll see you on Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.